Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for the weekly Worcester Nazarene podcast, a conversation with our pastors and leaders to help us along our journey of loving God, loving people, and living transformed.
Welcome back to the Worcester Naz podcast. I'm Pastor Sheldon, and here in the studio with me today is Pastor Andrew.
It's great to be here.
And you just preached our message this weekend, wrapping up a long series going through 1st, 2nd, 3rd John.
Yeah.
And you had the entire book of 3rd John.
Very long, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If any of you are looking to get caught up on your Bible plan, you need to knock out a book today.
15 verses in 3rd John, you're good to go.
3rd John is it.
It is.
There's a lot packed into those verses. One of the most powerful passages is the one you touched on, I have no greater joy.
Yeah.
Than to know my children are walking in the truth. But one of the things that you said in your message is, let's not skip over the rest of the chapter. We might open up some of that in the podcast.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give you space to do that.
Sure.
If you want to dive into the rest of 3rd John that we did not hear on Sunday morning, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm just going to read part of it real quick. Probably most of it, but this is just picking up in verse 5, the part that we didn't get to this past Sunday in the message. John goes on, he says, "Dear friend, you are doing a good work for God when you take care of the traveling teachers who are passing through, even though they are strangers to you. They've told the church here of your friendship and of your loving deeds. You do well to send them on their way in a manner that pleases God, for they are traveling for the Lord and accept nothing from those who are not Christians. So we ourselves should support them so that we may become partners with them for the truth. I sent a brief letter to the church about this, but Diotrephes, who loves to be the leader, and that line seems significant,
yeah.
Diotrephes, who loves to be the leader, does not acknowledge our authority. When I come, I will report some of the things he is doing and the wicked things he is saying about us. He not only refuses to welcome the traveling teachers, he also tells others to not help them. And when they do help, he puts them out of the church." Yeah, it's like, what is going on? Who is this guy?
This guy is running his own show.
Yeah, it's like all about him is what that's saying to me. Like, it's all about Diotrephes.
Traveling teacher comes to town, anybody helps them, gives them place to stay, out you go.
It's crazy.
Wow.
John, he concludes this thought, this part of what he's going on. "Dear friend, don't let this bad example influence you. Follow only what is good. Remember that those who do good prove that they are God's children, and those who do evil prove that they do not know God. But everyone speaks highly of Demetrius, even truth itself. We ourselves can say the same for him, and you know we speak the truth." And this Demetrius, in reading some of the concordance and the commentaries, this Demetrius was the one that was delivering this letter of 3rd John. Like, he was the one. They're like, this Diotrephes guy, whose name I cannot say, like, be aware of him. Don't be like him. Be like Demetrius, the one who is handing you this letter. Like, he is living out this walking in the truth, loving people. And just as I was reading, like, this section in the weeks leading up to this, just kind of that dichotomy between the two examples of, don't let this bad example influence you. Like, John is saying again, watch out. Like, even in our context today, like, there are so many bad examples. And I would say even within the church as a whole, like across, there are some bad examples that we could get connected to.
Right.
And John is saying, beware of if these people are not following the truth and living the truth of the Bible, then don't follow that example, but instead do what I've been saying, all of these three books that we read, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, like genuinely love these people, whether they're traveling teacher, whoever they are in our lives today, that's the life of loving God, loving people, living transformed, that I was kind of talking about at the end of my message yesterday too. Like, John is just reiterating all of this one more time. And he's saying, Demetrius, who is handing you this letter, is a living example of this love of Jesus.
I can just kind of see Diotrephes being like, whose name is in there? Like, leaning over, trying to be like, who are we listening to? I'm in charge, you know.
Who is this guy?
It seems like a bit of an egomaniac that's been getting away with some stuff. And a very parental letter from the Apostle John being like, I was kind of thinking, like, he always says, my dear children, my dear children, over and over throughout the series. And my dear children, get it together.
Right. watch out.
Yes.
A lot of it reads almost like Proverbs too, because Proverbs is over, my son, go to wisdom. My son, dear children, it's like that language right. of just like, this is the road you should be walking in.
Yeah. You've let something creep in. You've developed these behaviors that are not good, and you're following examples that are not leading to Christ-like behavior.
Yeah.
Follow this guy who's operating in humility, not this guy who's operating out of ego.
And right.
Yeah. That's, and it is a interesting capstone to the three letters from John, just because he is that older apostle speaking to the young church, and you can kind of see some young church behaviors going on there.
For sure.
Yeah.
How could they have had anything but young church behaviors? Right. That's what they were.
Yeah.
They were just figuring it out.
Yeah. And it's the difference between something that's established and has structure to it and safeguards in place to keep the faith going in a safe direction without it being taken over by personality.
Right.
And this is a personality that was just overbearing and running away with things.
Out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that a lot as you were starting in on, I have no greater joy than to hear my children are walking in the truth. And I often think of that as a parent to child or grandparent to children and those kinds of things. But this is not human family language.
Right.
This is my spiritual children. Like yeah. he's talking about the church as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard for us to know like how many people John actually impacted over the years of after he was directly a disciple and mm-hmm. after Jesus ascended to heaven, like how many did he impact? But the fatherly and that spiritual children relationship, like that fatherly instinct is so clear in the way that he is writing and the way that he reiterates things. I mean, in the first, second, and third John, how many times does he say like, love each other, love each other. If you don't love each other, you don't know Jesus. Like
right.
he reiterates that so many times, and just that spiritual mentorship and investment is so clear throughout.
Doesn't church tradition teach that he left Patmos and then eventually went to the church in Ephesus?
Yeah,
where he disciples like Polycarp or Ignatius, or was it Ignatius and then Polycarp?
I don't know the exact order. Pastor yeah. Nate hit on this like the yes. first week. We would have to go back and listen.
Somebody immediately corrected me right, as soon as I said those backwards.
Pastor Nate could set it straight for sure.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was great. You asked right off the top, what is your joy source? How do people really identify what we're going to for our joy? You listed off a few things, but yeah. that we might be looking towards, but how do I identify where I'm getting my joy from?
Yeah, I think it for me, I found in the past when my joy source is something besides Jesus, it's something that it's almost like I can't get enough of it. Like it's still not filling that void. But I keep going back to it because I'm thinking in my humanness that this is going to bring me whatever that joy is that I'm seeking after. So that, I mean, that could be a bunch of different things. Like in my life in the past, that's been like video games to the extreme, or I'm guilty as anybody of just scrolling on my screen and like this is
not the one finger boomer scroll,
not the boomer death scroll. No, like I'm a millennial thumb person, but yeah. Oh my goodness, that was so silly yesterday. But yeah, like it's I think it's those things like that we keep going back to and keep thinking, well, if I just like go to this one more time, or I get a little bit more, and it's never fulfilling us.
Yeah. And you mentioned some of those things like alcohol, porn, screen time can give temporary relief or a high or a pleasure, but they're temporary and they take more than they give.
Yeah.
And so you end up with definitely a net loss. And I've often said this, that what sin offers, it is something real in the sense that you get that temporary high, that pleasure. In other words, people are always like, well, drugs are bad. And I'm like, well, they're good temporarily. Like they make you feel really good, or else yeah. no one would do it, right? Like there is something within it that we're chasing, but they are bad for you. They are definitely bad for you. And all these things are bad for you. But in it, there is just enough of that thing that you're seeking that it gives you that temporary high, the pleasure, the escape. That kind of thing. Why do we keep returning to these things that
yeah.
give us nothing?
The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy.
Right.
And he's going to do that however he possibly can. And I would say even in playing on the chemistry of our brain, because there's some very real chemistry brain things that are happening here with dopamine. Like this dopamine high, and I would say in our culture, in our world today, we are on a dopamine overload in so many different ways. And so there's like the enemy can take that and play on that of like, well, you just get that feeling one more time, or this drug will make you feel good just one more time. But then you need more and more because of tolerance and all these other things that are happening. Right. But I was, even as I was talking about like the gambling thing yesterday, I've again watched a video on YouTube about this a while ago, watching too much YouTube. Here I go. But there's this thing that I learned that in the gambling process, it's not even that you win when you have the biggest dopamine spike. It's when you place the bet, because the idea of winning is a higher dopamine spike than actually winning. And so it's like that type of thing is what I'm talking about when I'm saying like, we're going to these different things to think this is going to be, there's just this hope that maybe this could bring me joy, and it might spike our dopamine initially, but then the reality of the consequences of these choices that we're making are like the complete opposite. And we hit this rock bottom, because as much as we're chasing, whether you want to call it dopamine or joy replacement therapy, we're chasing that high. And if it's not Jesus, that is our true source, and those things are always going to leave us empty.
Right. And some of us chase adrenaline too.
Yeah.
That some of, like, I have often thought maybe my propensity to procrastinate was kind of chasing that adrenaline a little bit. It's like, man, I just perform so much better when it's panic time.
I read something about that recently that said that's actually something emotionally wrong that you need to fix in the depth of your soul.
Because
it's like putting off dealing with reality.
Well, it was a much bigger thing.
I'm not trying to call you out.
No, it was a much bigger thing when I was in high school. Like, I would just procrastinate things by a factor of one from whatever it was.
So 100%.
If I had a month to do a project, I could do it in a week. If it was a week, a day, that's kind of how I went.
Yeah.
And that's...
I've written a term paper in 3 hours before.
Yeah.
Before ChatGPT ever existed. So
but we do chase that adrenaline, that dopamine, and we're playing with the body chemistry behind it. But it does train our brains in a way of like, this is the thing that will satisfy me. This is the pathway I go down to get my joy. And that's how you start to identify where are you really getting your joy source, because these things have worn grooves into your life of like, when I'm down, this is where I go. When I'm feeling alone, this is where I go.
And it, I would say too, it's not always just a joy thing. It's like in the moment, this is just what feels good. And just what feels good is what's going to appease me for now. And you can just settle for that, just what feels good in the moment and how fleeting that really is.
It is. And that's how you create the pathway for addiction. It's how destructive lifestyles creep in. And if you're constantly placing the bet, you're never going to buy the house.
Right.
And that is a reality for a lot of young millennials right now, looking like, I've spent all the stuff that I'd saved up on gambling or some other form of satisfaction. I don't have enough money to, I mean, home ownership is out of reach for some people.
That's
regardless.
A whole other podcast.
But Dave Ramsey was talking about what percentage of 20 to 40 year old males are involved in sports betting.
Yeah.
And we've watched an inverse trend of people buying homes in that same age range. And he's like, I'm not saying that this is 100% why, but it leads to it.
And like, we've got to come to this point in our lives where we stop just blaming the things around us and start taking some personal accountability for the choices that we make, starting with myself. Like there's that very real part of it of, okay, this isn't always just something that happened to me or somebody else is doing this thing. These are the results of the choices I'm making. This is what I've sowed. The other one verse I read yesterday, this is the things that I've been planting, and now this is the harvest that I'm reaping. So what do I need to start planting today to change that?
Right. Planting, tending, watering, being about over the long term and not just that temporary thing. You told us not to be grumpy Christians.
Sure.
Not walking around.
I honked at two people today as a confession. They did deserve it, though. I want to be very clear.
And there's a difference between a pleasant honk, like toot toot, and they're like,
they were like safety honks, to be clear.
Sometimes the horn is an instructional tool for other drivers.
It is, very much so.
But The yeah. ability for that to take on a whole different tone is very close.
Truly, yes.
So we're not being grumpy Christians, but what's the difference between having that joy and just walking around trying to look happy?
Yeah, I think it comes back to like this sometimes is really a choice. I wrote this paper. This is back in high school, and I wish I could find it, but I don't know where it went to. This is like junior year of high school, but it was like Beneath the Facade was the name of this paper. Oh, and what yeah. I was talking about, I don't even remember how this happened in English class in my junior year, but I was talking about like, what are the masks that we put on in life? Because we all can do this of just like, everything is fine. Everything is great. You have this image of being okay. And whenever everything in our life is not okay, when we're living it, because I've been through seasons of like, even in 2020, I alluded last time about healing. I had to have this surgery that I did not want to have. Like I was not okay for like 6-8 months, even outside of the whole virus mania that was happening in our culture. Right. I had this personal thing going on in my life and I was not okay. But I still did that same thing of like initially I was just putting this on of like, everything is okay. But then I finally came to this point of, oh, it was a surrender thing really of surrendering to, okay, Lord, I'm going to choose to allow you to heal me however you see fit. Mm-hmm. And through that, I'm going to choose that your way is better. And because of those choices, I can now begin to believe that there can be joy on the other end of this, and not just the other end of it, but even right now in the middle of it. And I think we can apply that concept to whatever we're facing in our life, that we don't just have to. And again, we're not just always going to be okay. I'm not just saying we should always be happy and always be joyful. Like we have real human emotions, but even in the midst of that, Jesus can still be our source of truth, our source of joy, and our source of strength. He knows our hearts. He wants us to cry out. He wants us to rely on him. There's so many verses we could pull out about that. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing of all of these things. I wasn't just trying to give, and I said it maybe more clearly in first service and second service yesterday, this absolute of like, it's always going to be joy all the time, because I know that's not reality, but we can always land back there at the joy source of Jesus, and that's going to keep us consistent.
Yeah. Life is genuinely painful.
Yeah.
There are times in your life where it is genuine pain, and we have Jesus, the Prince of Peace, who walks that road with us through the valley of the shadow of death.
Right.
And he helps us fear no evil. I often think of Jesus sleeping in the middle of the storm.
Yeah.
At peace. The storm is all around. He's content and sleeping. And he gets up and he says, "Peace be still, peace be still." And it is a directive, like silence, peace be still.
Yeah.
And he's commanding in that way and commands peace in the middle of the storm, and everything goes back to peace. Finding our joy in Jesus does not mean that we get zapped out of our problems or zapped out of the painful situation that we're walking through. It does mean we have one who walked beside us that's bigger than that situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what it means to be the Prince of Peace. We're going to get into a little bit of walking in the truth. As a child of God, I have surrendered my right to live my truth. Mm. That is countercultural.
Sure.
Why do you think that's become such a big thing in our culture of walking my truth instead of the truth?
I mean, I would say we have been brainwashed as a culture to believe that we have a right to live my truth, right? Like that's just become so normalized in every setting. And as that has become so normalized universally across the board of my truth and my opinions and my feelings, like I alluded to all those things yesterday, as that has become so normalized, it has completely left behind any semblance of the real truth. Like even things that are happening, like there's so many different contexts, like in different church settings and things in the world, where if we would just get back to the simplicity of the Bible, this is part of the reason that I read so many verses yesterday in succession. I was trying to reiterate that if we just read the Bible for what it is, I didn't even expound on really any of those verses. If we just read the truth for what it is, we can see how very clearly my thoughts, my truth, my opinions are not always, almost ever, the thoughts and the truth of God, and how I need to align myself with the truth and not just my truth. And so as much as our culture wants to tell us that we have this empowerment to live my truth and everything can just be my way, it's all about me, 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 me. It's my money and I want it now. Like there's a commercial for that. Like it's the opposite of who Jesus was and is. Like, Jesus came as a servant, as a slave. On his way to the cross, he's washing the disciples' feet as a slave, as a servant. That's what the word is in the Greek. Like, that's the example of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And here, how am I going to sit here in 2026 and say, this is all about me and my opinions and what I think, when Jesus was about to lay his life down and he's washing the disciples' feet? Like, there's such a difference between those two mindsets. And I want to fall on the side of Jesus and servanthood and really loving people and not just get so caught up in me, 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 me.
And look what's happened in our culture. As everyone's kind of lived their own truth and gone their own way, what has been the swing back the other way is, what can we tie our lives to that's solid, that's been stable for years, those kinds of things. So a return to traditional ideals, those kinds of things. There is a movement back the other way to say, what is timeless? Is there something that I can anchor to that isn't just blown around by the wind? And that is a real desire within people. And we offer that hope.
Yeah.
As Christians, we're going out in the world and saying, there is one who is true, that you can tie your life to him and he will lead you through. And you can find your source, you can find your identity, you can find out who you truly are, what you were created to do. All of that is not something, some journey of self-discovery. It's a journey of discovering your creator.
Right.
And through that, you will see yourself in the correct way, through the correct lens, through the way of truth that reveals who you really are. And that I just feel for people that are stumbling around trying to find themselves, when in fact they need to discover their creator.
Right.
And he offers all of that.
Ultimately, it's an identity crisis.
Yes.
And if we are not identified as I am a child of God, then we're going to try and find our identity in all of these other things. And those other things are kind of the same realm of chasing after these different joy sources. If it's not Jesus, it's not going to work. That's what I found to be true in my life. Anytime I've tried to put my identity in anything but Jesus and what he says about me as a saved and forgiven and adopted and regenerated one of his children, whenever I get away from that identity, that's when everything in my life gets way out of whack.
Yeah. One of the last things, since I'm the family life pastor, I am thinking about the actual children and families and how we lead them and teach them to walk in the truth. Sometimes parents feel discouraged that they don't do enough spiritually at home. What is a realistic habit that we could put in place into our home, or maybe that you've put into place in your home, that we could start doing this week to lead our children in the way of truth?
Yeah, I think I've talked about this a while ago, but one thing is like, and this is still something I need to do better at, of like your kids seeing you read the Bible. I know my wife Sam does really good at this. I do it on my phone a lot, and that just looks like I'm again doom scrolling. But like
the your paper kids, Bible, right, is, the,
like having your actual Bible, your kids seeing you read the Bible. But then beyond that, like, reading the Bible with your kids is also amazing. But I think one really practical thing that everybody can do every day right now, if you have kids, is just pray together every evening as a family, whether that's at bedtime with your whole family together, individually with your kids, but find a way to pray with your kids. And then as you do that over time, giving them the opportunity to pray. Like right now, Emery is five and she just turned five. And hearing my five-year-old daughter, who is very sweet and very sassy, like all at the same time, but hearing her pray, it's just like, that is the embodiment of that verse of no greater joy. Like, I have no greater joy than to hear her say, "Dear Jesus, thank you for being with our hearts today and for letting us spend time together. Amen." Like, that's her whole prayer. And that she doesn't really understand all of what she's doing or saying, but her heart is calling out to the Lord. So that prayer together as a family, I think, is a really practical step that everybody can take.
One of the things, I have teenagers in my home, so they're not always keeping the same schedule I am. They might not see me routinely in the morning or the evening, whatever. But one of the things I've done with my teenagers is say, "Hey, what are you reading in your Bible lately?" And if they say nothing, that's a different conversation.
Sure.
"So what have you been reading? What have you been filling yourself up on?" For the most part, my children will say where they've been reading. And it's an interesting discussion, because no matter where they're reading, there's questions to ask about that.
Yeah.
"Well, what's God been showing you? What does that mean to you where you're at? Is there something that you're discovering that's new?" And that practice of reading their Bible on their own, yes, reading them with you when they're younger, but reading it on their own and developing that habit in their life is so super good.
That's so good.
So any stage, whether your kid is dependent on you to start that process or they're getting more independent and you're just coaching them in that process, it is good to engage our children and help them walk in the truth. Well, guys, we could probably go for another hour with all of this. Pastor Andrew did his best on 3 John, and I would challenge all of you guys just to dig in deeper in all of that stuff and dig up more treasure as you go. We're going to get into a standalone sermon this week on America's birthday and what it means and all of that, and then we're going into a series on the Lord's Prayer. This is going to be a dynamic series. I'm very excited for it. And I can't wait for you guys to all join us in person, online, wherever you might be. But until next week, we'll see you again soon.
See you soon.